The Bible can sometimes be very confusing, especially when different people have the same name. Between the Old and New Testament, there's more than one Joseph, more than one Zechariah, two people named Judas, two people named James. Then, of course, we have people who start with one name and end up with another. And then, of course, in today's example, we have three different people with the same name, and that confuses us about the life of Jesus. In the beginning of the second chapter of Matthew, we hear about the wise men coming to see Herod. But there's one Herod at Jesus' birth. There's two completely different Herods than that one at the time of Jesus' death. This one is the father of those two. Today we're hearing about Herod the Great. He was anything but during his 40 years of reign over Judah. We should call him Herod the Horrible. He rose to power in Judah in the year 37 BC, but he didn't rise to much power because 25 years before he got that throne, Israel and Judah had already been conquered by the Roman Empire. And as an occupied territory, he only has delegated powers, whatever minuscule tasks the emperor and then the governor and then the proconsul from Rome will allow him. What they do freely allow Herod to do is to raise taxes. As long as he sends most of it off to the capital, he can certainly keep enough for himself for a luxurious lifestyle. But there was one problem. When Herod became the king of Judah, he couldn't necessarily be the king of the Jews. Why? Because he wasn't Jewish. He wanted to legitimize himself in that role, and so he took some of those taxes, chests full of gold, and sailed on a ship up to Rome and purchased that title, the king of the Jews, from the emperor and the Roman Senate, as if it was theirs to give anyway. But from that time, Herod the Great became very, very paranoid that everybody around him was plotting to take away that title and take away his kingship. So great was that paranoia that he banished one of his wives, one of his sons, had one of his brothers put to death. And so when he hears that there might be another king of the Jews, of course he has cause for concern. What we notice here is a great contrast between the way the wise men act in Herod's presence and the way they act in the presence of the Christ. In the presence of Herod, they show no respect. In the king's presence, you should only speak when spoken to, and you do not question the king. And yet these men have come to the king to ask, where is the king? And as far as Herod is concerned, hey, you're looking at him. But no, they know that he's not the one they've been searching for. Herod decides then, I need to deputize these men so they will reveal to me the whereabouts of the Christ child so I can come and do him homage, which means to end his life and everybody associated with him. So they quickly leave Herod's presence and they follow the light of that star that will lead them to the manger, to the cradle, to the stable at Bethlehem, and where in Herod's presence, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar didn't curtsy or bow. When they're in the presence of Jesus, they don't just bow, they face plant in the dirt. They lie down prone on the barnyard floor. Most of you wouldn't like to lie down on this floor because you don't know when the last time it was that it's been mopped. But could you imagine what's on the barnyard floor? And yet they do this as the most profound physical sign of humility and respect one person can show to another. They are kings, but they recognize they are in the presence of the King of Kings. And that's what makes this an epiphany. That's a Greek word, but we use it often in English to signify very much the light bulb going off above our head. When something we couldn't explain, couldn't understand, couldn't figure out, all of a sudden becomes plain to us. That's what an epiphany is. The hidden becoming known. The invisible becoming visible. And in this case, there are three different epiphanies going on here, perhaps signified by the three different gifts that these men bring with them. What is being revealed to us? First and foremost, God in the flesh. He is so invisible, immense, and intense. He made everything out of nothing. But for a period of time, he decided to become one like us, born of a woman, born of a womb, just like we were. And we have to look to a baby to save us. It's humiliating for us to do that, but even more humiliating for God, who is everything, to put himself in that little baby in order to make it happen. That's the first epiphany, the invisible God revealing himself in the flesh in the person of his only begotten Son. The second epiphany that's going on here is God revealing his Son as the Messiah and for whom? Everyone. The Jewish people were very selective in their reading of the Hebrew Scriptures. They liked the prophecies that said a Messiah was coming to save Israel and vanquish their enemies. They didn't pay much attention when there was evidence everywhere that God was sending a son, not only to save the Jewish people, but to save all people. And because these wise men believed that the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Jesus is a savior for them as well, they who are Gentiles find in him their hope of salvation, and that is our hope as well. In making that journey, these men fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah from the first reading today. 700 and some years before the birth of Jesus, Isaiah said that kings will come from afar and they will open their treasures of gold and frankincense. And that's exactly what these men have brought because they believe they're in the presence of the one who will save them and set them free. St. Paul reinforces that same message in our second reading when he says to the Ephesians about the Gentiles, anyone who isn't Jewish, they are co-heirs, they are co-partners, they are members of the same body, they're on equal footing with the Jewish people. God reveals himself in the flesh as a savior for Jew and Gentile alike. But then they offer those gifts that Isaiah spoke of, gold and frankincense. Gold because Jesus is a king and he deserves it. Frankincense because he is a priest. Frankincense was imported to Judah so that it might be used at the temple in Jerusalem. All around the altar inside the temple were burnt sacrifice was made day in and day out. There were huge flaming pots with frankincense in it. Why? Number one, when the incense was burning and the smoke was rising up, they believed God was receiving their prayers and their sacrifice. Number two, it was fragrant. It covered the aroma of all the burning flesh that was happening there on that altar all throughout the day, every day. But Jesus, he is a priest unlike any other. He receives this frankincense because he is a priest. He is the altar, he is the lamb, he is the sacrifice. But in this impromptu baby shower that develops there at the stable, the third gift is the one that stands out. And Isaiah didn't even see that one coming. It was the myrrh. That was something that was typically used to anoint a dead body. Once again, it's perfumed because decomposing bodies don't smell too good. But parents want binkies and baby booties and blankets at baby showers. They don't want to receive something for that child's death. But these wise men understand at what price God will set his people free, the price of the life of his own son. That's the third epiphany. God reveals his son, a Messiah, who loves us to death, who will give his life to set us free. That's the great blessing for us. The great blessing that God has revealed himself in the flesh as a savior for everyone, in every country, on every continent, in every century, until Christ comes again, and that he will go to the ends of time and to the ends of the earth and to the end of Jesus' life in order to seek and to save the lost. Then the party's over. The wise men have to go home. No one's going back the same way they came. Joseph and Mary came from Nazareth. They're not returning there. They're going into Egypt. So Herod will never succeed in his plot, and he will eventually die before Joseph, Mary, and Jesus return to Nazareth. Matthew tells us the wise men took the long way home because it was revealed to them in a dream that Herod would find them and track them down and exact the information from them that would allow him to kill that baby. They're never mentioned again in the Gospels, but our Christian ancestors tell us that those three wise men, those kings, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthasar, went back to their homes in the far Middle East and in North Africa and began to become missionary disciples of Jesus, telling all these people that they should look to Israel and to Judah, to Jerusalem and to Bethlehem and to the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Jesus in order to seek their salvation. They became disciples, and they went out to make disciples. And that's what the encounter with Christ is meant to do for all of us. Like the wise men, after we encounter the Christ in the sacraments, we're called to travel a new path. We are called to be disciples. We are called to make disciples. And so as we continue to celebrate the greatest gift of Christmas, Jesus in the flesh, the wise men have offered their treasures. What will we bring?